Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 8th of February. Very nice to have you with us. A lot to talk about this morning, and we will do just that. We have a great panel to do it with, and we're going to have fun this morning. So, or as much fun as you can have talking about all the stuff we're going to talk about, like Virginia and fleeing upstate and Trump investigations and the Green New Deal, which I guess is good news, and Jeff Bezos and all that. So we have a lot to talk about. We'll get to that in just a moment. We welcome your letters, as always. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me go around the room and we'll welcome everybody. Judith Enck is with us. She is the senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics and former EPA regional administrator. Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Judith Enck, it is always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you. David Soares is with us. He is the Albany County District Attorney, our dear friend. Good morning, sir.
It's a day that I must demonstrate tremendous restraint.
I know why.
I mean, you wake up in the morning and you see Virginia, you see Bezos, Pecker, and you're like, I have to be restrained today. Just
well,
too
yes,
much.
But we do have to be restrained about that, particularly me, with my penchant for quips.
However, you will be restrained, right?
However, I also know that you're in that position, David, where you have to go hand in hand to the hand out to the legislature and ask them for money and all that.
Yes.
Can't be pleasant.
It is the most unpleasant experience.
It's demeaning, isn't it?
It is. But you know what? I am so happy. The silver lining in all of this is she's back. And we don't, we need theme music. She is back.
Teresa Bourgeois is with us. We had letters of people. What'd you do with Teresa? Well, Teresa went and you got a gig.
I had a gig and it was in the morning.
Yep. So it took you out of commission. And now you're back in commission and can join us every once in a while, and we're thrilled.
So delighted to be back. It was supposed to be 6 months. It turned out to be 8, which was good for the gig, but I missed being here, and I'm delighted to the folks wanted me back. And
well, thank you.
Some folks stayed in touch on Twitter along the way, but so this is great to be back here.
We do need Teresa theme music, though.
We do.
What would that be?
I don't know. Rich is still thinking of what his theme music is going to be, so we have to work on that too.
Well,
Rich's theme music.
And David's thing, the theme music will be dong.
No, I'm a Shaft man. Shaft.
The music.
Yes, the music. Geez, in light of everything that's happening, I better be very clear.
Again, you said you were going to be
restrained. I'm going to
be restrained.
Yeah.
All right.
How's that working so far?
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you? Good to see you.
Well, I'm relatively happy.
Excellent.
I can only say that the lockbox
for you, that's good. Relatively happy. That's good.
Lockbox is going splendidly well. Joe, do you have a contemporary total?
I do. Actually, I do. It is $721,600. So that is very impressive.
So we're on the trail of $800,000, in which case, we could easily make it in one day fund drive. That would be great. So the number is 1-800-323-9262. Again, 1-800-323-9262 or wamc.org.
Now, allow Alan and I to remind you that the fund drive officially begins at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. So we know you'll be there. If you haven't done anything yet, you'll be there for that. And yes, we're all hoping, given the beauty of the lockbox, that it'll be a one-day fund drive, and we hope to do that. So whatever you can do now is cool as well. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
Do you know what HLWs are?
No,
FHL. Famous
last words.
Famous heavy last words.
Oh, I got you.
We'll do it in a day. Get it now?
Okay, yes.
I will tell you this, that the kids are paying attention, and that's going to be the new shorthand when they text today.
I see that sort of on a European sticker.
Yes.
The round oval. Well, good morning, and let's get started. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot going on, and so let's begin with Jeff Bezos. Well, this is a story. So he is accusing the National Enquirer of Extortion and blackmail. The richest man on planet Earth accused the nation's leading supermarket tabloid publisher of extortion and blackmail on Thursday, laying out a theory that brought together international intrigue, White House politics, nude photos, and amorous text messages. Mix, stir, enjoy. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon and the owner of The Washington Post, made his accusations against American Media Incorporated, the company behind the National Enquirer, in a lengthy post on the online platform Medium. Last month, The Enquirer published an expose of Mr. Bezos' extramarital affair with Lauren Sanchez, a former host of the Fox show So You Think You Can Dance. The headline of Mr. Bezos' post, "No thank you, Mr. Pecker," targeted David Pecker, the head of the tabloid. Remember the restraint? You all agreed to restrain. The headline of the Mr. Bezos' post, "No thank you, Mr. Pecker," targeted David Pecker, the head of the tabloid company. In the sometimes digressive text that followed, he accused American media of threatening to publish graphic photographs of Mr. Bezos, including a below-the-belt selfie, if he did not publicly affirm the Enquirer's reporting on his affair was not motivated by the political concerns.
Let's remember that this guy is the world's richest man. And one of the things he said this morning was, if not me, if I can't take these blackmailers on, basically, who? And I think he showed a lot of guts. I mean, I really have a lot of appreciation. Married for 25 years. That's a nice run, isn't it?
I was so sad to read about their divorce. And I mean, I think that at first they both were very diplomatic in the statements that they put out there. But I think people read that and said, boy, that's just sad. And now we kind of understand what happened to bring that about. I think that things would naturally, resolve in that sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
But when now you learn that you have a media tabloid, a supermarket tabloid paper that has been engaged with the president of the United States in attacking the president's enemies, and you're putting all of this together, I think it served both Mr. Bezos and his wife very well. But I don't think that it's going to serve Mr. Pecker and Donald very well in the long run. If your bullies usually pick on people that are weaker than them, this is the first time that this president has picked on someone who is much bigger than him, and he also happened to do it by proxy.
So the other thing, too, is that, I mean, if you want to talk about something just being rich, is that you have the president of the United States using a friend,
surrogate.
A surrogate,
or proxy.
to out someone's marital infidelities seems rich and very convoluted. And I mean, it just, this story gets, the more you read it, the weirder and weirder and weirder it gets.
In addition to all the very weird, salacious aspects of it, the part that I'm most intrigued by is the Saudi connection. That apparently, reportedly, if Bezos is correct, what is really bothering them is that the investigation that might disclose their Saudi connection. And this on the same day that the U.S. Intel put out information that they had proof that the MBS had tried a year before to kill the Washington Post reporter.
So Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos. Okay, go ahead.
Right. And so there's that whole set of just astoundingly bizarre, salacious parts of this. But what about the Saudi connection? What is it that they're so afraid of disclosing the Saudi connection that they would go to these bizarre lengths.
Mm-hmm. So, can I just read that one part of the article? This is from the New York Times. But in his post, Mr. Bezos also appeared to imply that the tabloid company was doing the bidding of Saudi Arabia. Quoting from a New York Times report last year, quote, after Mr. Trump became president, he rewarded Mr. Pecker's loyalty with a White House dinner to which the media executive brought a guest with important ties to royals in Saudi Arabia. At the time, Mr. Pecker was pursuing business there while also hunting for financing for acquisitions. The Post has been reporting determinedly on intelligence assessments that the Saudi crown prince ordered the grisly murder of Saudi dissident and Post Global Opinion contributor Jamal Khashoggi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Washington Post has been really brave and heroic standing up for, I mean, this is kind of basic stuff, standing up for one of their columnists being murdered and wanting to seek justice for that. But I think the real story is, what is animating the National Enquirer to make such severe threats and blackmail against Bezos? Because if I'm remembering the story correctly, the threat was stop your investigation. But it was stop your investigation not just of the Saudi connection, but the initial revelation.
It is literally the worst. I mean, they insult criminals. These people insult criminals that I think do a fairly good job of covering, you know, their acts. Here you have a company, a corporation that has engaged in a very handsome plea with the Southern District of New York in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Attorney's Office. And part of that plea is you're going to continue to cooperate with us. And as many people know, in the Southern District, you come in and before they take you on, you have to disclose all of your criminal acts, even those that may have passed, you know, the statute of limitations. And this organization, through Mr. Pecker, went ahead and did that. And part of the agreement with that is also that he would commit no further crimes.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
And so right now you decide that you're going to take a stone and throw it at a guy who can afford, you know, helicarriers, and he's shooting back at you. And the thing that you just remembered at the last second is, oh, my God, I have vulnerability here with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District. And so,
and they put it in writing. So what is so
urgent?
What is so urgent? What is more important to protect than that?
Right.
David, can you explain? One thing I wasn't clear when I was reading this last night is, so he got, Pecker got immunity.
Mm-hmm.
But does that extend if there are additional?
Oh, no.
I didn't think so.
No. It does not extend. You cannot
he
go
loses
out
that
and,
protection.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, could it work exactly the other way?
It's
in
a violation
words,
of.
Take away your immunity because you violated.
On the original issue that you had received immunity for. So, and believe you me, this is an office that, right, every single I is dotted, every single T is crossed. And so the reason you see the kind of panic that you're seeing right now on the part of Mr. Pecker and his organization is because they are done. They are done.
Can I just ask an overarching question? But isn't this to prove the point that for people that have been complaining that the Mueller investigation is going on and on and on and on and on, is one of the reasons is because all this stuff keeps on getting added to it.
You know, so if you're the prosecutor in this case, if you're Mr. Mueller and you come in, and granted, you know, we never hear from the man, he doesn't do interviews, so you don't know how tired he is, right? But here's a guy who comes on, in limited scope, he's going to do his investigation, he brings on a good group of people, and lo and behold, it's like, okay, well, guys, we should be done by February. Make that October. We should be done by what? He just tweeted? Okay.
No.
We should be done by December. And on and on and on and on. I mean, these people commit crimes out loud. They're not good at it. They're not good at it because they play this game of politics. And of course, you know, in politics you can say certain things, you can do certain things, you can blackmail people in a political subtle way because of disclosures. You can do all of that. However, when this conduct becomes crimes, when the kind of conduct that we're talking about here leads to people being prosecuted, some of these folks, because this is all they know, cannot help themselves.
So, David, I have a David question, if I may, as a prosecutor, which you are. We were treated with the idea that when the head of the Southern District was appointed by Trump, he called him in and had a conversation with him, as I remember this. So leading a lot of people to say, well, you know, they're not going to do anything that's going to be tough on Trump, but apparently not.
Look, it's you cannot fake being a prosecutor. You can't do it. And it's not as if Chris Christie, even when he was U.S. attorney, he put together some very good cases and he took down very powerful people. The point being,
good staff.
You have great staff, and even if you're corrupt, the 400 people who work for you, who wake up every single day to come and do the job, they're not going to, you know, shy away from doing their work. And when, as a prosecutor and as a leader, if you give your staff a moment of pause and they begin to suspect you, well, guess what? You become the target.
Well,
right?
So today we see Whitaker, right?
Former prosecutor.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds.
Coming up. So it's very interesting. Maybe we can continue this a little bit. And the Congress is after him for doing exactly the kind of political obsequiousness that we see.
Whitaker's not a prosecutor. Whitaker was a political hack who just happened to get a job as a prosecutor.
But he used to be a U.S. attorney out of Iowa.
And those are appointments.
But the issue there is what the president said to him. Right. That's the issue with Whitaker.
All right. So we'll get to all of this. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org, or 1-800-323-9262. We'll continue our panel after this short break. Well, we got into a very good discussion during the break, and we kept on saying, save it for the radio, save it for the radio. So we have all kinds of things that we've saved for you, and welcome back. I'm Joe Donahue, Alan Chartok is here, Judith Enck, David Soares, Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Judith, I know you wanted to say a couple things about the Bezos story.
Yeah, these are two very sophisticated pieces of advice for people in the public world. One is, if you're a lawyer for National Enquirer, don't put the threats and the blackmail in emails. I mean, what makes them think that they have that authority, that putting these blackmail threats in emails is going to make it? And I agree that Jeff Bezos did a brave thing here, but I just think people in public life should not be emailing photos of their private parts to others. Just stop. A grateful nation would thank you.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it is a cottage industry for people involved in human trafficking. There are people who exploit young people who they lure young kids into sending photos of themselves and then they blackmail them, forcing them to continue to further send them other photos. And so the child pornography industry, there is, if you can say, a deeper underbelly to that industry. They make their profits and they obtain their products in the same way that the National Enquirer just tried to do with Mr. Bezos. But I will also say this, that we're living in a time right now where you're absolutely right. They have shown how the dumbest lawyers in America operate.
Yeah, these were lawyers who sent these emails.
They're just dumb lawyers.
And arrogant.
Arrogant.
An old
Could
friend
I just I'm sorry, just go right to back to Teresa. I just wanted to remind everybody that the lockbox is still open.
Oh.
And that you can put something into it by going to WAMC.org. And how much is in there now, Joe? Do you remember?
It's $721,736.
That's fantastic.
And I bet there's some people listening who've been listening and have never been a part of this in this way. And I bet they would feel good if they called today and did that.
Absolutely, Teresa. You've always been so smart. And that's right. You're exactly right.
There's just something I'm a bit uncomfortable with coming right off of a of a blackmail discussion into the lockbox?
Don't be so cynical.
I wanted there to be a bumper.
He may have something.
I wanted there to be a bumper. Like, we could have gone to Virginia.
You may have something there, David.
We could have gone to Virginia, then come back.
No, you may have something there. Here's the blackmail. If you don't put something in and we lose the station, that'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
You could have National Enquirer Radio.
Wow.
There you go.
Run by Mr.
Weaponizing, yes. Weaponizing journalism.
So you put a nice bow on that.
All right. Did you want to, your point, and then we'll move on.
I was just, an old friend of mine, Laura Pearl, is the interim superintendent of schools in the Boston Public Schools. And another friend sent last night, he's got kids in the school district.
Name dropper.
And they, well, no, this, so they're launching next week this 24/7 Respect Week. It's a whole week of education about texting and social media. And they provide three basic things. Think before you speak, text, or post. Ask yourself, is it welcome to or kind? And remember, anyone can see what you post. And I thought maybe Bezos and lots of other people, if they follow those basic rules.
Send it to the president, too.
The president. That would be helpful. You know, I mean, just what were they thinking?
The worst, I will tell you that the worst part of this story, for me anyway, is that it unleashed the Beavis and Butthead that exists in my brain. And for guys my age, there's quite a bit of that going on. Because look at all the different directions that you go with this story. And I'm hoping that we can evolve, get to the Saudi, Southern District.
Which is what Teresa and I have been trying to guide.
You're
this
trying
tour,
to right? yeah. move Joe and Alan and myself away from that. And I thank you both for your high-mindedness.
Two words, be best.
Be best. But it is, oh, good Lord. It is, though, an important time to help people think about, you know, that what you post is public.
Well, this is a real problem.
It is a problem.
Particularly with teenagers. And you've got teenagers acting like the National Enquirer.
Right.
They get suggestive photos and they threaten their peers. And, you know, we're all kind of old fossils. We didn't go to high school with this technology. This is a real issue.
And I will say this. I mean, note to the criminal syndicates of the world. You probably should stop taking pictures of your crimes, too, because it's amazing just how many people do something wrong, but they want that little trophy.
But it helps you as a
person. It helps us.
People are just weird anyway. I mean, this is getting off the subject only a little bit, but I was at a funeral for a family member several months ago, and I was talking to the funeral director, and I said, just making conversation, what's the worst part of your job? And he said, lately it's been watching people take selfies with a corpse.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
With that note, hey, Alan, how about some letters?
Okay, I will.
Use that as a palate cleanser, and then let's go right into the letters.
That was like the State of the Union, the segues that didn't work.
We have had several welcoming Teresa back to the panel. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm so delighted to be back.
And Bob says, political leadership is very different from business leadership. In business, everybody works for the owner or the CEO. The business leader hires and fires, sets standards and goals, and the employees follow the leader. Sure, there's managing upward in the American government. The leaders, the president, the speaker, et cetera, lead by persuasion. Also, business leaders can fire anyone. How does a political leader fire a citizen? By prison, exile, or firing squad? Do we want a United States where the government can fire people? I don't think I want any business leader to become president, and that's Bob. Well,
so not supporting the Starbucks guy.
I hate to inform Bob, but your government is perhaps the largest, you know, corporation on planet Earth, and the executives are appointed there by the board of directors that should be us as citizens who vote for them. Right. And so there is a benefit to having people who come from different experiences run our government. And in the past, we've seen as citizens, we've received many benefits from it. But it's another thing entirely to have a bozo who's never succeeded as a businessman, who tries to pass himself off as a successful businessman, running our government.
And who is a firer.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all he
does.
In
government and in business, right.
Who proved that he didn't know how to handle money either.
Yeah, we hired Wink Martindale as a president of the United States.
Don't denigrate Wink Martindale.
Apologies to the Martindale family.
All right.
Okay, and Chuck says, Jeff Bezos, good morning, panel. All I can do is laugh. You threaten the richest man on the planet with blackmail? Too freaking funny. Can't you see?
Too freaking funny.
Yeah, and rock on, or it says here, roach on.
And a guy who owns a newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot.
But that apparently is what they were really worried about, what the newspaper was going to do and what it's doing, especially on the Saudi thing. That's really
the Saudi thing. There's just something about that. And remember, where did the president of the United States go? What's the first country he visited?
Saudi Arabia.
All I'm saying is, if you're going to mess with someone, mess around with those people who send you envelopes full of coupons. You know, you want to mess around with somebody, go mess around with those people. Yes, penny saver people.
The Ravina penny saver.
There you go.
I'm not sure I get this point.
I'm with you, Alan.
I get it.
I'm with you. I don't get it either.
Well, no, they mess around with a guy who owns the Washington.
Who owns everything.
The Post. Yeah.
He's the richest man in America.
Penny saver.
What would Catherine Graham think of all of this?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a good thought.
We have other letters?
If you saw the movie, then you'd know her editor. Was the one who. Okay, so Chuck says, we did that. We did Chuck. Okay, Richard says, Bezos and Inquirer, accusing Trump unfair without proof. Where is your proof that Trump is prime mover for the Inquirer story? I am not a Trump fan, but Richard said he obviously wants to check in on that.
Hey, Richard, you remember that guy named Cohen who allocuted before he pled and informed the public about the relationship with the Inquirer and Trump's relationship with the Inquirer? I think it's pretty safe to say that a guy like Jeff Bezos, who's never appeared in any kind of, most people don't even know who he is, all of a sudden appearing in the Inquirer because of the noise that the Washington Post continues to make about their murdered reporter. I would say that Mr. Bezos, who has the best investigators probably on planet Earth, has probably, you know, brought to light some evidence that he felt strongly about and evidence that he felt confident enough to put in a letter.
And this morning we have the Crown Prince being identified as the guy who said, I'd like to put a bullet in him, the Khashoggi.
Right. Khashoggi.
I think what Bezos is doing is exposing the entire business model of the National Enquirer and their practice of catch and kill.
Yeah, catch and kill.
And this was to the person who wrote in, this has been in publicly reported. There's this little morning news show called Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. And they received calls that unless they were easier on President Trump on the air and unless they called him and apologized to him for being harsh toward him on the air, National Enquirer would write a story revealing that, you know, they were romantically involved.
They've and now they're married. So.
Right.
And Mr. Farrow, I believe, was also a recipient of
Colin
that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not isolated, I think, is our point. And I may have already mentioned this, but I think the best line in the Bezos blog post last night was that the National Enquirer attempts to weaponize journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And more letters.
Very quickly, let's remember that Mr. Pecker has taken a plea. So, in other words, this is not Mr. Innocent.
No, I don't know if he took a plea.
No, he didn't take a plea.
There was part of his cooperation agreement.
Well, I'm so sorry. You're so right, Drew.
I just want to defend the fine man who owns the National Enquirer.
He took a plea. That he had
I think Mr. Shartok knew that. He just wanted to say the name again.
And the
really?
Other part of, the other part of this story that's...
Guys, this is public radio.
Sorry.
The
Come
other
on.
Part of this story that's so bizarre is the fact that the Bezos' girlfriend, mistress, whatever, her...
From Fox News.
Brother.
And by the way, I don't
brother.
Like the word mistress.
Not
I
Fox
don't
News.
Like the word
no.
mistress.
No,
oh, a Fox,
Fox Network.
Show.
I think
Fox
it should
Network.
Be
so
lover.
So you think you can dance.
Lover?
Yeah.
I
want
to watch that.
Whatever.
I don't like
whatever.
That.
We're having two different conversations.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't
so
like this.
So her brother is a friend of Roger Stone's.
Whose brother?
The woman that Jeff Bezos
is having. We're spending way too much time on this, but whatever. That to me intrigues me too.
And the, her brother also is close with Trump. It's not just the Roger Stone connection.
Right.
So you think maybe this comes back to Roger Stone? This
or maybe it's a setup.
It's kind of a Roger Stone-ish
thing.
The
whole thing is just fascinating. Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I just want you to think this one through, okay?
All right, so here
we have an administration. Here we have an administration that this investigation is shedding more light on, and you know their relationship with another publisher, Mr. Julian Assange, and we've have evidence now of a lot of information being. Stolen information, terrible information, hacked information from the Russian government being leaked through Julian and the politicos having that information prior to and being able to forecast with certainty when things are going to be dropped. So we have evidence of all of this happening. My question for the gentleman who wrote wondering how Mr. Bezos knew that this was going, this is just a smaller scale with the Inquirer. Than Julian Assange's publication. Right. It's the same exact act.
I think the last line of his note, too, you know, we're going to kick over this, turn over this rock and see what's underneath. I mean, that's really.
More to come.
Mr. Pecker's just out of control.
He is out of control.
The most helpful thing to me is learning.
Restraint.
Is learning that there is a show called So You Think You Can Dance. Is that still on the air?
Oh, that's been around for a long time.
No, that's different from the one Rick Perry was on.
No, that's Dancing with the Stars.
But this was So You Think You Can Dance. Is that still on?
I believe it comes and goes.
It may be the first time I tune in regularly to Fox. I want to see that show. That sounds like fun.
We have to go, right, for a little thing?
you can read a letter. The letter and then we
David,
can.
Please opine on whether Bezos could mount and maybe win a lawsuit against Pecker, similar to the Hulk Hogan case that bankrupted Gawker. Wouldn't that be delightful schadenfreude?
Well, you know, Mr. Bezos has two different venues to pursue, his grievance. Now, the part that is going to be difficult for him is the fact that, you know, truth is always a defense. When you're making allegations that someone has besmirched your name and you're trying to sue because of a media outlet, or truth is always going to be a defense. And so I don't think he has much of a claim there with respect to damaging his reputation. But what he also has that I think that has become all too clear for Mr. Pecker is he has, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office that he can then turn all of this information over to and allow for the U.S. Attorney's Office to mount, a criminal prosecution against the Inquirer. I'm not going to say the name.
10 points for Gryffindor. Okay. By the way, just so Judith, if I don't know what your plans are for this weekend, but I just looked up So You Think You Can Dance. They're actually having auditions for the show. It's going to take place in the summer.
Where?
But you can audition in New York tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm canceling my Saturday.
There you go.
Train and go.
And I think one of us should be responsible for letting Rich Hona know about this.
Yes.
And probably the worse you are, the more likely you're on the show.
Well, at least for the audition round, sure.
I'm going.
All right. We'll be back after this short break. Oh, God. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. 8 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock. All right. So let's talk about, this is my gift to you, Judith Henk. Let's talk about the Green New Deal. Liberal Democrats are formally calling for a Green New Deal, giving substance to a rallying cry. We heard this yesterday as a resolution was introduced calling for a sweeping environmental and economic mobilization that would make the United States of America carbon neutral by 2030.
This is desperately needed. I think this is exciting. I know out of the gate, people are saying, oh, it's unrealistic and it's just aspirational, but it's definitely the direction we should be going. So it calls for a couple interesting things. One is a commitment to getting to 100% renewable energy and stopping the use of fossil fuels entirely. I think what we know about climate change and the UN report saying we only have 12 years to avoid catastrophic climate change worldwide. I think that's actually pretty reasonable. It calls for massive energy efficiency at buildings, so that'll create lots of jobs. It calls for electrifying the transportation sector. We focus a lot on power plants, but cars, trucks, planes are also a big source of carbon. We can have renewable energy and then have plug-in cars and plug-in buses. And then it takes, you know, I think a fascinating turn, a guaranteed job with living wages, adequate family medical leave, a reliable retirement system, and then high quality and health care for all. I think all of those are important goals. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was getting a lot of the visibility on this yesterday, but I think it's important to note that the co-sponsor is Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, who is just so impressive. He knows a lot about climate change. I think he's a senior member of the Senate. I think it's exciting that the two of them have teamed up. There are already 64 co-sponsors for this in the House, 12 co-sponsors in the Senate, all Democrats. And interestingly, 4 presidential contenders have all signed on to the Green New Deal. So this is...
what do you have to lose, Judith? I mean, I don't want to be cynical about this.
Who could be
against
this?
But we know the world is frying up. Yeah. We know we're in terrible shape. We know that this is obviously something that's not going to happen tomorrow. So they go and they say, we're going to introduce this Green New Deal. Why would anybody be against it in their right mind?
It's inspirational and also aspirational. But I just want to correct you for a moment. Yeah. It is Senator Markey.
Markey.
From Massachusetts.
Markey.
I think, Senator. The first place you have to start, however, with the Green New Deal is with leadership in the United States of America.
Right.
You have to begin by having an executive that understands climate change, believes in the threat that it presents, and a leader that is so strong that would also encourage other leaders from other countries, even countries that may not be our friends right now, to also share in that goal.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
Okay. We just got this letter, and I just want to address it because I wonder what people hear when we say things. Okay. So Susan writes and says, I believe the comments about the penny saver and clipping coupons are ill-advised just before starting a fund drive. It may not be good enough for you, but many in your audience are fans, and many small businesses are sustained by the customers they draw through the penny saver. Aren't $5 donors good enough for you?
Wait. I want to stop that right there. I mean, how many times has anybody in this room heard me talk about the value of the $5 givers?
No, but we were talking about the coupons in a positive way.
No,
right?
Well, what we were saying is that they're not going after the penny saver,
the people who
can't defend themselves. They're going after the richest man in the world. That was the point. We're not against the penny saver. So just that. And then to Alan's point, yes. Please stop the ignorant elitist comments. And Susan, you want to correct that because it doesn't seem fair.
Well, I know how many times I have said $1,000 or $5. It's the mantra of this station. And we have said it again and again and again. And I have a problem with that letter.
Well, speaking of helping the common person, the Green New Deal would do just that in terms of providing reliable health care and a strong retirement system. I mean, every time you're in a supermarket and you see a very old person working at the checkout, you worry. Like, is this person here because they enjoy packing groceries or because they don't have the financial security in their older years?
Judith, this world is going to hell. We have no bigger problem than what we are facing with the ice packs and everything else, and the fact that the oceans are warming and raising, mm-hmm. and we know, you of all people know it better than any of us. This is worse, in my opinion, than the potential for nuclear war.
It absolutely is, and you're absolutely right, Alan. The thing that I really admire about the proposal is the fact that it just reminds me of President Kennedy and saying
we're at the New Deal.
We're going
Roosevelt.
To the moon,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And
the moonshot.
And there were many people that said you're crazy. We're not going to the moon. And the idea that we can transform our economy at the same time that we're preventing catastrophic events, that will have impacts that are having impacts mm-hmm. right now, because
right.
there's serious issues in West Africa where the climate has increased by 2 degrees, and the devastating impact that it's having on small farms and forcing people to migrate to other places. There are no walls that you can build to prevent, you know, the catastrophe that's coming if we don't address this immediately.
And I think that this comes at an important time. You know, elections have consequences, right? And now we have a Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who has for a very long time, you know, earlier than many people, has been a leader and outspoken on climate change. Our own Congressman Tonko, I think it's great news that he was selected to chair the Subcommittee on Environment and Climate.
Although Tonko has not endorsed the Green New Deal, a bunch of New York House members have.
But I think that that's okay. I think that that's okay.
I think he should, though. I mean, if he's a leader on climate, this is like, what side of history are you on?
But I think it's clear what side of history he's on with his record. And I think that the Green New Deal sets a conversational framework, but then you have to actually legislate. And it's just good to know that the chairman of the subcommittee is going to be somebody like him, who's been very forward-thinking for a long time on these issues. And you have a Speaker of the House who's been on these issues for a long time.
Right.
All right.
And I just quickly want to say that this very is quickly. Not just aspirational. This is the next 2 years. They develop the plan, and then they parse out pieces of this to the different committees who are responsible for drafting legislation. And by the time that happens, hopefully Donald Trump is not in the White House, and then they could work on implementation.
In the big house.
We have to take a break, and we will continue. We have news with Ray Graff. Remember the lockbox, WAMC.org. You can also call us 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. And just the music we're hearing is the Andrew Collins Trio playing shows in Elmira, New York, and Sprakers, New York this weekend. AndrewCollinsTrio.com for more information. And you can find the information on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable, where you can also go to WAMC.org and help out that lockbox.
Okay, Joe, you couldn't have said it better. We really do need all the help we can get. We can't let rest on our laurels. It's the lockbox is open and will be till 6 o'clock on Monday morning. 1-800-323-9262. And if not that, then go to WAMC.org. Again, WAMC.org. Like to hear from you. Tell them Alan sent you. Okay.
Now, we'll go to letters in just a second. We should mention that Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker is testifying right now before the House Judiciary Committee following a lengthy fight between House Democrats and the Justice Department that placed Whitaker's appearance in doubt for much of Thursday. Whitaker's testimony is expected to give Democrats in the House Judiciary Committee the chance to question him about his views on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation, any actions he's taken related to the probe, and his decision not to recuse from the investigation after Justice Department ethics officials recommended that he do so. In the opening statement made by House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler, he criticized Whitaker for going against the advice offered by the Justice Department and the ethics officials to recuse himself from the investigation. Alan.
Huh. Well, you know, I think this guy Whitaker is the very model of a thug. And to lay it all out for you, he was clearly appointed for one reason only, and that was to protect the president from this encroaching investigation. Now he's up there, and I want to go to our lawyer, David Soares, because apparently there is at least the intimation that he can't answer the questions about his relationship with Trump because it would be violative of executive privilege.
Well, the executive can when asked questions, can claim executive privilege. The acting attorney general, much like myself, if I'm asked questions about active investigations, I would decline because I wouldn't want to compromise my active investigations. And so I think that he has – I haven't watched the hearing, but if he's going to be not answering questions, I would find another basis other than perhaps executive privilege to decline comment. But this is a person who – again, when we talk about this administration and this administration not hiding anything, yes, they're very bold in the fact that they're putting appointees who they know will cover for them in positions of authority. The one relief that we all have is understanding that within the Department of Justice, within the FBI, within the Department of Homeland Security, you have thousands upon thousands of public servants who believe in the Constitution of the United States, who would never allow for their leaders in those respective agencies to ever do anything to compromise.
At least some of them wouldn't.
Some of them wouldn't.
Well, except here the career staff at Department of Justice told Whitaker that their ethics counsel said you should very probably recuse yourself on anything related to the president and the investigation. And he found another opinion from someone else at DOJ and chose not to recuse himself. So I think what's also happening, I agree with you fully that there are professional, ethical career staff, but they're being overruled regularly.
Well, I think you had to sit back and watch last week as the leadership within the intelligence community all took raised their hands and swore an oath and told the truth. And then you juxtapose that truth with what with those subsequent interviews from the president of the United States. But my point, my
that
larger
was a
point,
shocking moment in history, by the
it,
way.
It is. But my larger point being, at this point, this train has left the station. It is down that track. It is barreling in at very high speed. There's nothing that these characters are going to be able to do to prevent the truth from coming out.
And you saw, David, and you, I'm sorry, Teresa, I'll be right to you, but you saw the poll that showed over 80% of the American people want that report from Mueller released to everybody. 80%, and that included an awful lot of Republicans, and maybe far higher, I don't remember the exact figure, maybe 87% or something like that. They're going to have a tough time, even with their new guy coming in and saying he may have to redact some stuff and do all of that. They're going to have a very tough time hiding that.
They're going to have a very difficult time, and there's no, you know, court jurist that has been put in there by Trump that can undo that. The Constitution was created long before this president. It will be here long after this president.
I'm sorry, Teresa, you were going to say?
I just think it's interesting to step back and thinking about the position of the Attorney General, which is so important to the country and the world. And by all appearances, the selection by Donald Trump of Whitaker was done with the framework of what was important for Donald Trump's self, as opposed to what was important for the country. And that is very problematic. We've been very lucky so far that nothing really horrible has happened, you know, in this administration in terms of national, international. I mean, lots of horrible things have happened. But but this is a very important role in which the president of the United States appointed somebody who it appears he thought could protect him, but who is terribly unqualified for the job, and that is a real problem.
I agree with everything you said other than the fact that nothing has been done to. There are a number of cases involving police brutality and other investigations that the Department of Justice had been involved in making sure that communities that had disproportionate crimes that were being committed against people of color, the Department of Justice is no longer defending those cases.
I misspoke. So, I didn't say that correctly. I was more thinking there hasn't been a 9/11.
An international.
There hasn't
been a
crisis
absolutely.
Where everyone had to come together. There's been a lot of things that have happened. So I'll correct that. But I meant, you know, a major.
Let's go to letters.
And here we go. David says, climate change question. Good morning, panel. Love the panel. My question, why do climate change deniers claim that it is a hoax? I've looked and looked, but I haven't been able to find an answer. I just don't get it. If it's a hoax, why? What's in it for those who are perpetuating the hoax? Any insight would be greatly appreciated. Susan, we're on. I am so sorry here. We are on a roll right now, so I want to make sure that we can get this done real fast. Go.
The vast majority of Americans do not think it's a hoax. It's really perpetuated by Exxon and Mobil and the fossil fuel industry and elected officials who take a lot of money from them, or elected officials like Trump who are misinformed.
But for those who say that it's a hoax. They're going to say, oh, this world has been here for millions of years, and this is just a little bit of a blip. That's
95% of climate scientists disagree with that. Right. And so, you know, and also, like, it's a bad news message. People don't like bad news.
Follow the money.
Let me just also say very quickly that Homeland Security, as well as the military, would not be repositioning some of their greatest assets to different locations because of a hoax. They do that because they understand that the weather, the oceans are getting a little tougher, the weather is getting a little more violent. So there's that.
Last year was the fourth hottest year on record, according to
I thought it was the second.
Fourth? According to the radical organization NOAA.
Yeah. Well named. Bill says, Green New Deal. Let's remember that while the GOP and the Trumpers are mocking Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Green New Deal, even the Pentagon in a January 2019 report declared climate change a national security threat with grave implications for military installations and personnel, plus increasing global conflicts, forced migrations, and disease. Thanks, Bill, from Cooperstown. And Jeff says, Judy Inc. Brought up the need to convert transportation to electric power, then goes on to talk about cars, trucks, and aircraft without even mentioning trains. The fact is that the technology to electrify railroads has existed for over a century. The only barrier is funding the capital expense. Let's get going.
Yeah, I mean, the technology for trains is there. Look at the New York City subway system. But for the other transportation sectors, they're way behind. The other quick thing on the Green New Deal is we're seeing state bills introduced that mimic the federal proposals. So in New York, Senator James Sanders from Queens and the Rockaways has put in his state version of a Green New Deal. And remember, the Rockaways was really damaged by Hurricane Sandy. So it's already having the impact of tackling this at different levels of government.
And hopefully personal behavior, too. It raises awareness, gives people new things to think about how to address these issues personally.
And John writes, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is our great hope. She is smart, focused, and shows comportment, and yet is illustrating urgency to be a public servant with progressive ideas and an action plan. Panel, do you forecast the establishment, in quotes, of Washington attempting to thwart her incredible energy and leadership? We already see various attacks on her character and gender. I am so worried. And that's from John MSW.
Change agents will also always be attacked.
Sure.
Right. And she knows that. I think AOC is terrific, but I also think it reminds us that we need more women in their 20s and 30s in Congress.
Yeah.
She's the youngest person ever to serve in Congress. There have been lots of men in their 20s and 30s serving in Congress. She's the only woman.
Well, it was really great the other day. We all got such joy out of watching the women in white stand up and give each other high fives when they weren't supposed to, as if he was complimenting himself, Trump, on having gotten a lot of women elected to Congress. Well, he certainly did, but not the way he thinks.
We should note that Elise Stefanik was the youngest woman.
Yes.
Was at, 29?
Yes.
They're
very important.
Yes.
But my overall point is different perspectives, different life experiences, and having more young women in Congress is good for our debate about ideas and our democracy.
Yep.
And I've been wondering, too, since the number of people who are elected, many who are has served in the military, and because the military has been so focused on the climate issue, will that also be an added benefit in the discussion? I bet there are a lot of people.
And a record number of scientists were elected last November.
Like more than one.
Thank you, Joe. Yes, Elise Stefanik and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, very important perspectives.
And Mary says, why donate to the Green New Deal? Hi, panel. Of course, I'm all for the Green New Deal, but, capital letters, could the panel please explain why we're now being asked by Markey et al. To demonstrate our support for the Green New Deal with a donation? Don't our taxes cover our representatives' expenses no matter what their focus? No, I think what you're being asked to do is to support the phalanx of people who are really trying to get this thing passed.
Advocates, not the elected. Well, maybe the elected officials are fundraising for their campaigns, but you don't need to fund the Green New Deal. That's supposed to be a governmental action.
And there's a whole, you could speak to this better, Judith, but there's a whole national organization to try to energize young people. They had a conference call yesterday.
Sunrise
Movement. Right, around
and
this.
350.org. There are a lot of environmental groups
promoting
this.
What Bloomberg is doing and others.
And Chuck says, Green New Deal needs a plan for coal jobs. Most of the Green New Deal proposals talk in general about providing jobs, but to get past the resistance of the war on coal, in quotes, conservatives there need to be an explicit plan for transitioning the remote coal mining economies of places like West Virginia to an economy centered on around green energy.
The Green New Deal, in addition to things that can be done now, really lays out a vision for what can be and what should be in order for us to meet the goals of the Green New Deal. So I think you're going to have to, you know, get to the table with industry, both fuel, the transportation, as well as those traditional industries like coal.
It calls for a just transition, and it calls for a guaranteed job with sustaining wages. It recognizes that some people in the fossil fuel industry will lose their jobs, and that's why but so many more jobs will be created in renewable energy and efficiency.
We're talking a lot about green. Let's talk about blackface.
Blackface, yeah.
All right. So how many letters you got there, Alan?
A lot.
All right. Well, let's do this real quick, and then we'll, David, we haven't gotten David's perspective on this. We've been talking about this pretty much all week. But it is, as David said earlier, the story that really does keep on giving in the sense that not a moment goes by where there's not something else added to this very weird equation. Crisis Management 101, how Virginia's top three Democrats dug themselves deeper holes. By any measure, the scandals enveloping Virginia's three top Democratic leaders, a toxic stew of racially offensive imagery and an allegation of sexual assault, are potent enough to potentially end any politician's career. Yet, Governor Ralph Northam, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, and Attorney General Mark Herring have managed over the past week to exacerbate their crisis in ways that have astonished political professionals. The nanner may have occurred when the governor, prompted by a reporter's question, appeared willing to perform a rendition of Michael Jackson's Moonwalk at a nationally televised news conference, during which he acknowledged putting on blackface to compete in a 1984 dance contest. But the cataclysm has also been punctuated and propelled by contradictory statements, untimely barbs, and assertions that have seemed insensitive and hypocritical. Oh, my God, what do we do in the state of Virginia?
But before we go to David, let's just one actor was left out. And now, you know, the head of the Senate, I believe, a Republican who I think won by a coin toss over there. He's been implicated in this also. So,
And he's fourth in the secession order.
Well, the speaker, I think, comes before president of the Senate.
He's fifth.
Go ahead, David.
I think the issue in Virginia really shines the light on how very little about African American history this country really spends time on. I don't care if you're talking the 80s. I don't care if you're talking the 70s. The idea that people don't know how offensive it is to put on blackface and pretend to be, the fact that they do so in the absence of understanding the Jim Crow laws and the minstrels and even Hollywood in the stereotypical portrayals of people of color in blackface. Is just astounding to me. And it's not just these three elected officials. You continue to see young sororities, fraternities, and young people doing the same thing, taking pictures of themselves. So in 20 years, we'll be talking about some young person who's going to a party, who went to a party 3 days ago. But it's always, to me, it always comes back to the fundamental lack of discussion and understanding and sensitivity that we somehow have just control alt deleted from the public school educational format.
But by the way, you are so right. If you go to Channel 58, my favorite channel on the television where I always go, if you're around here and see the classic movies, the portrayal of people of color is just unbelievable.
Oh yeah. And this one, I tell you, I don't want to take my serious hat off here for a second. I probably should keep it on real quick too, but the only legitimate blackface in this whole, ordeal is a gentleman who is alleged to have committed a sexual crime, and that it's astounding. Like how does that even happen? How does that happen when you're the head of your government in every capacity in the state of Virginia be involved in the most offensive, violent, you know, if everything is to be believed. How does this happen?
Because it's culture. It's the culture of Virginia, it turns out. Not the fact that every time you look at any one of these politicians, or so many of them, that they were involved in it. It was how you got ahead in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do three letters, and then we'll knock off for the morning.
Okay. So Peter says, getting rid of environmental regulations probably does have a short-term positive effect on the economy. Trump claims credit for this, and in a dark way, he's right to some degree. And when it all hits the fan, he'll be out of office, and the president at the time will be blamed. And and Louis says, the question Alan asked about the U.S. attorney at Southern District of New York being a Trump appointee, appointed an acting U.S. attorney whose term was limited by law, something like 120 days. We did look this up, and he says here that when Trump failed, the court stepped and appointed their own dude. That is not true.
That's not true.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Keep the lockbox going. The fun drive begins on Monday morning, 6 a.m. You'll be ready, right, Alan?
I'll be ready, and we'll all be ready, because the whole group of us, everybody who's a WAMCer, knows what's at stake here. Thank you, everybody.
WAMC.org. Teresa, David, Judah, thank you all very much. We'll be back after this.